my God.
Hi. Welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gab fest where a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture.
Was that your Tommy impression?
What we like to read and who we like to read. Food for thought. Our booties take a lickin' and keep on ticking.
Oh my god.
Calm down, Dennis.
Why did we let you do this? You are killing me right now.
And Tommy is out tonight. That's why I'm introducing the show. And we're joined by special guest thought, Christopher Soto, a.k.a. Loma. Yes. I am Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer, total scrub, and amateur Tommy Pico imitator.
True.
Dennis, come back to the room.
Sorry, I am literally crying right now. You have killed me. I am done. And I'm Dennis Norris II, and I'm a reader, writer, former figure skater, and a lover of sparkly rose gold jewelry.
Yes.
True.
I'm Fran. I'm a writer, editor, and I do believe in life after a 9-inch dildo.
Life is a 9-inch dildo.
Truly.
And I'm Christopher Soto, a.k.a. Loma. I'm a poet, editor, and one of the first Latinos to win the Pulitzer Prize in poetry.
Yes! Aspirational. Dennis, can you tell us what's on the menu this evening?
I'm always here for you. So, for today's menu, we play a bonerific game of multiple choice. Mind the murder of thoughts to learn who are the most impure. Declare love for our families of all kinds. And we offer up an Insta delectable dessert.
Ooh,
yeah. Take it away.
Our first segment, the Amuse Bouche, is a delightful little game we play at the top of each episode. And to amuse your bouches, today we're playing a game we call Bone Block Bench.
Love it.
Yes.
It's a variation on Marry, Fuck, Kill, if you haven't already figured that out, except we thoughtified it. Because, one, we don't condone violence, so killing is just absolutely out of the question. Instead, we block them, mute them, delete them forever. And then
blocking is violence,
true.
Fran.
Maybe in your book. Because you're blocked so much. Two, we don't condone marriage either. So we incentivize a cold, polite benching of them, meaning, like, you just, you know, keep them on the sidelines for now. Just, like, keep your eye on them. Like, you might, like, revisit that thing later. And then the third option, which is because we don't condone fucking, boning only. We're all geniuses. Wow, this is such a great game.
I hate us.
Okay, let's begin. Our first one's, I feel like, is really easy. Chadwick Boseman, Mahershala Ali, and Frank Ocean.
Bone. Am I allowed to bone?
No, Joe, you're
damn
not
it!
Allowed to do that.
Damn it.
This is really hard.
Oh, I think I have to bone Frank because of his feelings.
Really?
This is Joe. Frank for feelings.
Wow. I'm benching Frank because I feel like Frank is such a fuckboy and I just want to keep my eye on him, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's like, I'm just like, I'm okay to keep my safe distance and fuck Mahershala's brains
out.
Chadwick.
Less like a fuckboy. That's true.
Yeah.
Mahershala seems Christian like, doesn't give me fuckboy, though.
You think?
No. He gives
very
me...
very emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why he gives me, like, someone you take home to mom.
Yes. Oh, that's true.
But is he someone you take home to mom, and meanwhile he's on Grindr in your attic, like, planning a hookup for later in that day with your neighbor, like he fucks your neighbor?
Yeah.
On the flip side, Frank Ocean would give me some really sad sex, which I tend to enjoy.
I love sad sex.
And once again, so I'm definitely benching Frank, I'm boning Boseman, and I am marrying...
Wait, what is it?
I'm so deeply devoted to Mahershala Ali, I see wedding rings when I look at him.
Yeah, fair. Honestly,
it's
fair.
True.
Let's do the next one. Drake, Miguel, D'Angelo.
This is all just
to ruin Joe's life.
Block.
Dennis wants to block them all, and D'Angelo made me gay. So
D'Angelo literally made you gay, which is why he's in there.
Like, I'm definitely boning D'Angelo.
You're aging yourself.
I am also boning D'Angelo. But
Drake is the only one I know. So, yeah. I'm really bad with popular culture.
Watch the Untitled music video right now. I wish I could show
but
it
I mean,
to you right now.
Also, like, bone Drake, you know?
I feel like...
Drake.
I would love to bone Drake.
But I think I'm taking it realistically, too, because if Drake was there, I'd bone him, and then I'd be like, so, like, my student debt? Like, can we take care of this?
Yes.
I think any of these boys could cancel out your student debt,
honestly,
though.
This game is just going to be like, yeah, I'd bone him. Yeah, I'd bone him, too. Yeah, I'd bone him.
It's going to be like, it's just sex worker appreciation podcast.
Truly.
But we love you all. You're doing the Lord's work.
Okay. this next one's so stupid. Kevin Hart.
I love Kevin Hart.
Why?
Joe loves Kevin Hart.
The
He's
worst.
So cute.
Oh my God. Kevin Hart, Will Smith, Lil Yachty. Isn't Lil Yachty like 12? He's literally, Alex is like, he's literally 12.
He's literally 12. So we're benching him because he's too
benching
young.
Benching Lil Yachty.
Wait, is he actually 12? I don't know who that is.
I would love to bench Lil Yachty and save him for later.
Okay, we don't condone pedophilia. We don't condone benching those
He's not 12. He's like 20.
Yeah, and after Call Me By Your Name, there's really like intergenerational conversations going
think
on.
Think
in
a more
room.
European way, Joseph. Do as the Italians do.
Joe is definitely boning Kevin Hart. I want to do his fitness things that he does on Instagram. I want to go jogging with him, and then I want to have sweaty, hot jogging sex afterward.
Side note: Kevin Hart is the voice of your trainer in the Nike training app.
Oh wow!
And it is a horrible experience. Every time they like cycle through different trainers, and every time Kevin Hart comes back, I'm like, oh fucking Jesus Christ! Like he's so annoying. Anyways.
I really can't imagine him encouraging me to be more aggressive. But I too would bone Kevin Hart because I kind of have a thing for short men who turn into zaddies. I'm like really into that. Yeah. And then he's the only one I'm interested in.
Okay, so this next one I haven't quite even thought out my own. Mind on, but Gael Garcia Bernal, oof. Ricky Martin, and Javier Bardem.
Ricky Martin bones.
Oh my god! Wow.
Yes, that was my first.
Yes, he's reliving still, your tween fantasies.
Well, I'm Puerto Rican, and yes, my family's like super like Catholic conservative. And Ricky Martin was one of the first like queer Latino people that they could see. And Puerto Ricans, like, they know everyone who's doing well that's Puerto Rican. And so as soon, it's true. They're like, hey, you know him? He's Puerto Rican. Like, they root for anyone from the island. So when Ricky Martin came out, it was a huge thing in my family because they're like, ah, he's Puerto Rican, but he's gay. Like, and so it's real.
Exactly. My mom said the exact same thing except about Ellen because she was like, oh, she was so great, but she's gay.
And so that's when I knew I could be a fag because Ricky Martin came out and then my family went to the Wingo Tango to see him in concert. I was like, if they accepted Ricky Martin, they will accept me.
Bone.
Snap.
Amazing.
You want to bone him to thank him.
Yes.
Possibly at the Wango Tango.
Yeah.
That field trip.
Yeah. And for Jesus, because we have to remember the Catholic roots.
Oh,
yeah.
it's all for Jesus.
Amen.
We always
Amen.
Do it for Jesus.
Amen. I mean, you spend a lot of time on your knees at church. So it's like Catholicism is really just preconditioning you. You put the wafer on the back of your throat.
It's the body
you know?
Of Christ.
It's, like
it's
the body
literally
of,
the body of Christ. You get to eat your God.
I used to gag on it, but it taught me. The body of Christ taught me to suck dick.
I love it because they give you the wine too, so they get you a little loose.
Exactly.
They give you the blood of Christ, you get a little loose, and then you eat his body. They're like, we're getting you ready, courtesy of the Catholic Church.
We've completely forgotten about Gael Garcia Bernal, my husband.
I know, I would also bone
and
Gael
Javier
Garcia.
Bardem. Okay, so I am absolutely going to bench Gael Garcia Bernal because I want to play the long game with him. And I want to end up with him eventually.
Wow.
And I feel like benching someone is like kind of the long game.
Yeah, it is.
And I absolutely would fuck Ricky Martin. And for similar reasons as Loma, like I remember watching like a 1997 live performance of Ricky Martin doing Live in La Vida Loca. And I remember he lifted his arms over his body to like dance a little bit and like just like an inch of midriff popped out from underneath his white guayabera, and I was like, fuck.
I remember that, and I asked myself, am I a suburban
I was like,
white
I'm
housewife?
Gay, yeah.
Because they were his audience, and I thought, fine, I am, because I'm 100%
that was
here
it.
For this.
Wow.
I am definitely going to bone Javier Bardem.
Wow, yeah.
Gael.
He looks like, I love that he has like one of those faces that's like hot because it looks like he got hit in the face with a shovel.
That is my my thing. I am so attracted to dudes who are like
hit in the face with a shovel.
Yes,
short. Shovel-faced zaddies. Dennis, how tall was your father,
so
and what did
true.
He look like?
It's so true.
Shovel-faced.
I love kind of funny-looking men. I do.
You really do.
Yeah, it's true.
I really do.
That is verified. Yes.
Okay, let's move on here to the brass tacks. This is where we get serious.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Paul Ryan.
I knew that was coming. I knew it was coming.
Are we bringing back Kill?
Uh-huh.
Just for Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan, Sam Smith, Casey Affleck.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry, everyone.
Oh,
I'm not sorry at all.
I'm never having sex again.
One of you have to bone one of these people.
What was the middle one again?
Sam Smith.
I'm boning Sam Smith.
Oh, God.
I guess I'm benching Casey Affleck, and I'm blocking Paul Ryan. I mean, it's just...
Really?
Yeah.
See, I, Casey like Dennis, would love to fuck Paul Ryan in order to ruin his career.
Well, mine is
from there.
Mine is not about ruining his career.
Right, Dennis, Dennis just wants to fuck Paul Ryan.
I just think he's hot. Like,
Dennis doesn't want to take health care away from someone. He wants to fuck someone who's taking health care away from someone.
Dennis is like,
I do.
Please bother someone else with your problems.
I'm boning Paul Ryan.
So then you're benching.
I'm benching Sam Smith, and I'm blocking Casey Affleck.
Wow.
Yes.
You, yeah, I would bone Sam Smith. I like a sad white boy every now and then.
True. I mean, well, you got one sitting right across from the studio.
I'm nice Joe. To nice to meet you.
Casey, I don't know who that is again, so we'll bench him till I could Google him.
Yeah.
and then block is Paul Ryan.
Great. Yeah. Let's get even more serious here. Anthony Scaramucci, Sean Spicer, Omarosa. we're doing
I think retired a
White House.
I'm gonna block Spicer.
Oh yeah,
bench Scaramucci because he's funny at least, and I guess bone Omarosa.
I would love to fuck Anthony Scaramucci. I would love, like, that seems
would.
Wild to me.
It would be
yeah.
wild.
That'd be such
shit,
great writing material.
The shit
material.
That he would say to you in bed.
Oh, my God.
He's really, yeah, he's going to be, like, total top.
No, I think he's going to be a nasty fucking bottom.
Whatever
and just say
it is,
the
he's
going to
be nasty.
Shit. Like, one fist in me is not enough.
I am 100% here for it.
I'll fucking ruin
definitely
you.
Boning him.
I'll fucking ruin
definitely
you. One thing's for sure,
him.
I'm blocking Omarosa.
Yes. Blocking Omarosa. I can't. I'm right. I'm,
wow. This yeah. was successful. Yeah. Great work.
That was great. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
For our second segment, we're bringing back one of our favorites, the impure thought. If you
yes.
don't know, an impure thought is a story in which a thought shares a salacious, saucy, cinematic, hilarious, hellacious, rambunctious, ridiculous
Ooh,
sex
God,
story.
Fran.
I know. Or all of the above, or either or. But we're doing things a bit differently this week. This week, the impure thought is...
Y-O-U.
You guys.
Oh my God.
So we put a call out, and we said, send us your impure thought stories. We'll accept submissions for the next 24 hours. And in those 24 hours, we got 46 pages of stories that I had to sift through.
And you loved every
and
minute
I
of it.
Loved every fucking yeah. minute yeah, of it. Yeah, y'all it are great. Filthy.
You filthy
y'all are
slut.
Fucking disgusting.
We could not be more proud
everyone,
of you.
Everyone, just go get a penicillin shot just because you
literally,
listen to the show.
Like, just,
you have
just in case.
In your ear just from listening to the nastiness. It's
I am
gross.
Literally so excited to share well, these with y'all.
And we've all got so many ideas now. About Ooh. Things to do.
Yeah. I know. Well, truly.
Yeah, new things to try.
You guys are absolutely in for a treat. We're going to try and get through a few. We'll see what we got here, okay? So, this first one. A few years ago, I was studying in Ottawa. Ooh, Canada. Exotic.
Where all of the best sex happens.
Yes. I met a very handsome illustrator at an art show, which I heard about from my friends. Mind you, I was hella out of my zone. Like, I was a student here. I was, like, fresh to uni and... Uni means
Ooh,
university, and out of a small town. So why not slut it up? Yes,
that
mama.
That's our motto.
Let's call them Mark. Mark was flirty, so And so I was timid. So I decided to ask him out for drinks, to which he said yes.
Mm. Great work, girl.
Mm. Okay. For context, this is like mid-January. So in Canada, this is -30 degrees Celsius. Can anyone do some math? It is absolute zero.
So I lived in Minnesota. This is Joe for college. -33 is where it intersects.
Wow.
So Celsius and Fahrenheit become the same at about that temperature.
Wow.
You're welcome, everybody.
Oh, my God.
It's horrible.
That's offensive.
So it is offensive.
It's homophobic.
Bar,
yeah. So getting to the bar is hell. Snow and ice the whole way, and drinks were expensive. Fast forward a few drinks later, and we ended up going back to my place, which is just Fiji. Yes.
I mean, you put in the money, you went outside, you bought the drinks.
This is an investment. A physical and financial investment.
Get the dick wet.
Yes. I just moved into this flat and barely knew my roommates, but didn't think they were home. At a certain point, things are glorious. He's in his boxers. Yes. I'm fully nude. We're grinding it up. Ooh. We start wrestling and tickling. Honestly, yes. Okay, whatever gets you going, mama. Okay. Which escalated into me running out of my room because I don't like to be tickled, which is weird. Okay, so like he liked to be tickling and then he didn't. He was tickled non-consensually is what we're getting down to. And then he was not into it. So he followed him out of the room.
Right.
Because the tickling had escalated. Okay? So he runs out of the room. Still naked. The guy chases him out. The door, I guess they, wait. It was out of the house.
Oh, no!
The door shuts. No big deal. The door shuts. They go back.
No.
The door is locked. And his keys are left in his room.
Oh, my. I am horrified.
And they say
30 degrees Celsius.
And they say, to my naked horror, I also see that my roommate's lights are on.
Oh, well, thank
so their
God.
Roommates. So this is a kind of a good thing, but also a bad thing. And they're like, fuck. So they literally have to break into. He said, I literally have to break into my flat naked in -30 degrees in the winter. I don't know. He said, with a steak knife. I don't know where he got a steak knife. I have no idea. He said he's praying to God that the neighbors don't see him climbing into his bedroom window with a steak knife half naked.
Oh, my God.
Luckily, the window was already open. So after he cut the screen open, he got it. And they all got it. And it was great.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
Wow.
Although I will say, being of quasi-Norwegian descent, and my family's all from Minnesota, that like rolling around naked in -30 degree weather in the snow is actually just a Norwegian pastime.
Yes.
Well, for those of us who are not Norwegian, that is hell.
I'm like
that's
literally
horrendous.
The least Norwegian. Could not be less Norwegian.
I
can't really relate to this.
My black ass doesn't like to go outside when it's less than 50 degrees on, like, in New York.
Have you seen Stranger by the Lake?
No.
You know how it's like sexy and then takes a wicked turn? I thought that's what this was going to happen. Like when there was a butcher knife, I was like, oh my God, it's going to turn into a murder. Like, do we have to report this story from Instagram? Like,
I will tell you, there were. We'll
and then
there.
I broke into the room and had to kill my roommate.
Oh my God. Oh my God. So no one would tell this story that I'm telling you right now.
All right. This next one was absolutely my favorite. They say, the first time I fisted someone, it was during a girl gasmathon.
Same girl, same.
I don't know. A girl gasmathon at kink camp.
Oh.
And I ended up reciting a guided imagery script that I use at work while it happened.
Oh.
She was
meditative fisting.
Okay.
That's my sexuality.
Ready? Wait. It gets so much better. She was twice my age. And an absolute joy of a person. And holy shit, was it magical. I will never forget the intensity of that moment. It was one of our first real interactions other than acquaintancy small talk.
Wow.
Because it was kink camp. Like, they were just getting to know each other.
Right.
It's like camp friends. And it absolutely cemented their bond. So, of course.
I mean, yes.
So, the next day, after this kink camp activity, I sucked the shit out of her cock before she fucked me on the couch in the back of a leather bar. Our connection is so that is fucking hot, first of all.
That is hot.
Second of all, they say, our connection is no longer sexual, and she has taken up more of a mentorship role in my life.
Oh, my God.
That's so beautiful, which I am so grateful for. Kink camp is fucking magical, y'all. I love fucked up queer kinky fans.
thought field trip.
I want to be fisted by my mentor figure.
Dennis, I love you to death, baby, but I am not going to kink camp with you. I am so sorry. Honey, that's not happening.
True that I probably can't handle it.
But now I'm curious about fisting.
Raise your hand at this table if you've fisted or been fisted.
I have not.
I have not.
So Joe's the only person. Joe's the only raising one. His hand.
When it's Joe fine. Met me and it both. Came out that I hadn't been fisted or peed
Joe was
upon,
like, let me help you.
Basically, he was pretty shocked.
I just, as your predilection as someone who says, I only am at home when I have a dick inside me, I mean, it feels like that's going to escalate to fisting quickly, but that's just sort of my, that's, you know.
Let's raise the stakes a little bit here.
Oh, God, no, the stakes are already too high.
Buckle up, boys, because I have a story for you. No! This is their words.
I love this person.
My boyfriend and I were driving across the country from San Francisco to Ohio, yes, mid-August, and we were camping along the way.
Yes.
We stopped down in a canyon in Nevada. Yes, I said Nevada, okay? That's how it's pronounced, where we planned to camp. But as the brilliant sunlit day grew longer, we decided to make the trek up to the top of the canyon and pitch our tent up there.
Oh, pitch our tents, yes.
We were completely out of cell service, and there was no one there.
What else is there to
do? There were no cars to be seen, and we headed up a small dirt path. A couple hours later, after night had fallen and a big, bad full moon in Gemini. First of all, props to you for knowing what the position of the moon was. That's like fucking queer as hell. Hung high in the sky, we set up camp and started feeling a little frisky.
Ooh, creative mining minor. Creative writing minor here, right?
Yes.
I love the imagery. I mean, she's trying. She's working on it.
Yeah. Hiking, sweating, and all that hot stuff had gotten our juices flowing, so we only had one headlamp, and we inverted it against a Nalgene water bottle to fashion a makeshift lantern.
Oh, my God.
That's genius. Fucking genius, queers. Okay, anything for a good lay. We both had a thing for outdoor sex, and we had a mountain to ourselves, so we thought. And we started fucking against a tree in open air, doggy style, hanging out of the tree upside down. All types of good acrobatic shit happened with this tree, okay? Right as we were both on the rise, upon climax.
I'm getting my life.
It just have to do with the moon or...
Exactly at climax, two big, burly men stepped into the clearing from dense trees about 15 feet away from us. They had in their hands large hunting rifles.
No! No.
What?
Oh, my God. No. Well, this took a turn.
Rural Nevada. Okay. Seeing as how we were both fully naked, I literally had a giant dick inside of me and somewhat haphazardly wrangled our clothes. We somewhat haphazardly wrangled our clothes back on and just kind of eyed them in terrified silence. We were both 21 and both very tiny and twinky. These guys had serious muscles. They were watching us too and stepped forward together as we got our clothes on. Hey, one of them said, we didn't expect to find anyone else out here. I can't remember what.
No, it's going to get hot. Oh, it's really going to get hot right now.
This is the beginning of a porn or a horror story.
I love this. It wins the Lammy.
I can't remember. I can't remember what we said because we were both in complete shock and trembling uncontrollably. And then they advanced a few more steps and the vibe became extremely uncomfortable. Their body language was so aggressive and imposing that we felt like they were going to kill us or assault us or something. I mumbled something, literally no idea what I mumbled. And after eyeing us up and down for maybe 30 seconds, and in 30 seconds, like a lot can happen.
That is a long 30 seconds of silence. So much time.
Because it felt like a literal century. The one in front of the... in front, nodded his cap, and they walked further along the canyon. My boyfriend and I were still frozen, grabbed each other in blind panic, and when we realized that they had stopped just out of our view, we hurriedly ran, got the fuck out of there, broke down our campsite in under a minute, and ran all the way down the canyon.
Duh.
We got back into our car, locked the doors, and drove another 50 miles crying and holding each other.
Oh, one of them is a Pisces. Gemini moons are really hard for Pisces.
That
really speaks so much to straight people, right? Yes. That, like, queer folk get, like, caught fucking in the woods, and then our first reaction is, like, I'm gonna get 50 miles away from here.
Get out. Like, oh, my God.
Truly terrifying.
Wow. I really was hoping for that to go a different way.
I know. I wanted it to end up in a foursome.
Same.
Wow.
Thank you. Y'all really absolutely came through with your stories. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Murder of Thoughts.
Num 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 thoughts. We've come to the moment where we start our thought process, the meat of our conversation. And what we're talking about this week is one of my favorite things, something that's actually saved my life this year, queer family. Now, I think when the straight world thinks about gayness, they think first about coupling, romance, and sex. The issue of gay marriage dominated the cultural discourse for like the last decade. But queerness builds itself around queer family structures. It's even embedded into the way we talk about ourselves and each other, from calling girlfriends sis to calling our lovers zaddy. Dennis knows what I'm talking about.
Always.
It's Vogue House is built around a mother. It's us calling Alex Chi our gay auntie and him tweeting how happy it makes him feel.
Duh.
Family is typically defined by kinship. My mother and father both gave me half their DNA, and that's why we're in one another's lives. But for so many people, coming out as gay meant the possibility of losing our bio family and being in the world on our own. Queer youth still make up the largest portion of homeless young people because of family rejection. In these circumstances, we turn to one another and the things we often get from biological kinship, like unconditional love, mutual care, long-term emotional support, we have to get that from one another. I want to connect this to capitalism and how the nuclear family makes a more flexible labor force. I want to imagine queerness is inherently anti-capitalist then, and that allows for other modes of being. And I'm going to end with something high and then something low. I'm going to end with a quote from Foucault from his interview called Friendship as a Way of Life, which is the classic, talking about how queerness actually opens up new possibilities for mutual care. He writes, "Perhaps it would be better to ask oneself what relationships through homosexuality can be established, invented, multiplied, and modulated. The problem," he writes, "is not to discover in oneself the truth of one's sex, but rather to use one's sexuality henceforth to arrive at a multiplicity of relationships. And no doubt that is the real reason why homosexuality is not a form of desire, but something desirable." So it's like a little homo supremacy there for you thoughts. So thoughts.
Yes.
We're all single here. Who's your emergency contact? Is it your mom or your zaddy?
Oh my God. That's like literally how I define queer family is. Like,
I know.
Who's on my emergency contact?
I saw you put that in your doc, but I had written this before. So I was like, we clearly are both thinking about that.
Yeah. I mean, like your queer fam are the people that you can be embarrassed in front of, or absolutely vulnerable, or like wounded in front of. To me, that is like that is the differentiation between just like being in a room with queer people and like someone who is like truly family.
Mm. Yeah, but my emergency contacts are predominantly in California right now, just because I've known those folks for like 20 plus years.
Right.
So I have one friend from fourth grade that I still call every single day.
Oh my god.
Why don't you live in California?
That's love.
Yeah.
Do you guys find, do you allow your lovers to be queer family, or is queer family strictly platonic?
I would love to have that example of a lover in my life, but I've never had someone where I'm like, yeah, you're ready to like meet my friends. Like, or like, I feel like they would be as good as my friends. I remember I had this a few years ago. I took a 2-week-long trip across the country with like 30 other people, 30 other creatives. It was kind of this like little moving train trip residency. It was like one of the most amazing bonding experiences I've ever had in my entire life. I had met such amazing people on this train trip. And I remember telling my kind of like quasi-internet lover at the time to meet me in San Francisco, which was at the end of the trip. And I remember being so high on all of my friends for 2 weeks that by the time I got there at San Francisco, I was there with this like kind of romantic partner, and I was less excited about him.
Interesting.
Because I was so high on my friends, and I was like, you're not as good as my friends.
Yeah.
And that was such an aha moment for me. So I would love to have like someone in my life who amounts to the kind of queer companionship that I get from like all those other relationships. Yeah. But right now I don't have that person.
Yeah, it's really hard for me because I primarily get it from romantic partnerships, like the notion of family. As quote unquote radical as I think I like to try to be, I like actually just mostly love monogamy and love living with a partner. But then I know. Sorry, everybody.
Solidarity. I'm
I know. Joking. I know.
I saw you looking at me. I was like, oh God, I have to speak. Don't I?
Loma and I are sisters on this. But what I've learned is that I feel like my friendships are much more stable and long term than romantic partnerships. And like working through conflict with people who I'm not sleeping with somehow is so much easier than working through conflict with people who I'm sleeping with and have all these expectations of. And it's like when that one thing I learned very early in my life is when romantic partnership goes away, what you have is family. And so you have to put in work with your family all the time, not because you need someone to pick you up when your heart is broken, but just because those are the people that stay in the end.
Yeah, for me, I feel that with my family in California, my friends in California, but I feel like New York, my relationships here are like more turbulent, but also like because the city has turnover so quickly, like people come here for their dreams. And then after a year, they're like, oh fuck, that was hard.
Like, my dreams suck. Then, I don't want my dreams anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I feel like people come here for like a year or 2 years and leave, and friend groups come together and they disseminate. Like I've had two different friend groups since I've been in this city. Mm-hmm. One of my friend groups, I left last year, because it needed to end. But I was also in a closed monogamous relationship for about 2 to 3 years, and that just ended. So for me, I don't really have like queer family in the city. Wow. And I don't really, I feel weird about imposing that language on the relationships I have right now, because all of like the deepest relationships that I have in my life have been less so about what I use at that moment when I'm relating to that person, and more so about like the longevity. Mm-hmm. So like my friend that I said I've known for like 20 years and I call every single day.
Yeah.
There's been like some years where I didn't call her every single day. Right. And we jumped in and out and in and out of our relationships. So I feel maybe it's a Latino me that is like, I've known him for 12 years. and that's how I relate to people. So I feel really protective about like who I call my, but I have a shit ton of friends here and I have a shit ton of love here. But my homies that I've known for like a decade plus, those are hard to, you don't know when they're going to build and when they're going to collapse.
That is a very Latino thing, that kind of like ancestral friendship love, totally. Where it's like they've been here for 1,000 years.
But that longevity does mean something.
Wow.
Like it.
It means so little to me. Isn't that so weird? I don't have a ton of friends in my life that I've had forever. Off the top of my head, I don't really have like friends that I want to go back to all the time that I've had for like more than like 8-10 years.
8-10 years is a long time though at your age. That means you've known them since you were a teenager. Mm-hmm. That's a long time.
Really? Also,
but I think
I know so many people that are like, I met them in first grade, and like I feel like there's so many friends like that.
It's a class and geography thing for me, because like I grew up very working class and in a small town in the West, and like everyone in my small town in the West stays there. And most old mad folk don't go to college, or they go to college and they go back.
So, like, how could you relate?
I mean, I just don't see. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, you know, and it's when you're 18, I was a very different person. So it's like, I don't see them anymore. Not that I wouldn't relate to them, but like, we have no opportunity for connection. It's like, there was this dumb psychological study. It's like, what makes people your friend? And it's actually like having a lot of interactions with them that are like very low pressure. So it's like you run into them all the time, and that builds a certain intimacy on which you can build then a friendship, right?
But to Loma's point, I think there's also a lot of intimacy in like long distance queer friendship as well. Like there's I have friends that I have like a friend that like I will have like the most kind of like vulnerable or like opening conversations with, and they live like 2,000 miles away from me. And like I, actually it's like 1,000, but anyways, small discrepancy, but like I call them, and because they're so separate from and have such an objective point of view to like different aspects of my life, I feel like they're able to help me assess my problems, or we're able to assess each other's like kind of like wearies easier because we're removed. It's kind of weird,
but I like the geographical and also like chronological like separation a little, so that I feel like certain friends that I have that aren't necessarily queer that I've known for a while can view me like in ways that are so outside of like this moment, you know, because they've seen my different phases and my different patterns, and they know like when I'm lying to myself about
certain
things.
It's like a mirror
things.
In a way.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Loma. What did it feel like to go through an intense friend breakup?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing.
Oh, they're going to hear this.
Oh, no.
Oh, they're all homosexuals. They're going to hear this.
We're the worst.
Well, listen.
Okay, we'll do it briefly.
Okay.
It was...
I don't need the... how did it feel for you? Did it feel like...
liberating. Liberating.
Wow.
Because the thing is... Okay, so long story short, I have a history of domestic violence. And one of the things with domestic violence is that we're, like, survivors is... We're not always the best naming our boundaries and naming our needs. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the times when I've cut people out of my life, it's because I'm discovering new ways to name my boundaries and name my needs mm-hmm. and what I need in relationships. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I cut out shit, even if it's like queer family for, you know, 2-3 years in New York, when I cut out relationships like that, it feels good because I'm like every single time that I do a move like that, the relationships that I come into afterwards are ones that are more respecting of like my value and my worth. Oh, so I'm really excited for that friend cut because the friends that I've invested in afterwards in the last year plus have been so much more worth it.
Wow, yeah, baby. There's something that's just like, it feels like exercise. It's just like tying the loose ends of like having that person that's like no longer someone who can support you.
Exactly. That's how you go from like domestic violence to not having anyone around you mm-hmm. who doesn't believe in you more than you believe in yourself.
And on that point, I mean, all this aside, it was a tough thing for me to learn and then relearn that queer people can hurt other queer people.
Oh my God, Fran!
Because like you kind of naturally assume that queer people are safe, and that's not always the case.
That is so funny because that is like kind of the opposite of what a lot of my experience with the queer community was like.
You've only ever felt safe.
I felt safer around liberal straight people than I did around queer people for a long time.
Part of it was
that I didn't have much of a queer community until I got to college. And that began to change there because I really only had a few friends, I would say, in the grand scheme of things, who were really queer. And since I've moved to New York, it's interesting because now the vast majority of the people in my life that I see outside of like work and other sort of obligations are queer. Like my entire social circle that I see on the regular basis for the most part is queer. I have certainly other friends that I see who are writers and that I went to school with and who I love very much. But and it's like, I don't want to go back. Like, I don't want to go back to a different kind of life where the majority of people are not a rainbow of colors and a rainbow of queerness. Like, that to me is, like, everything.
Speaking of rainbows, there's, like, a really dangerous thing that happens, particularly in gay male communities, wherein the queer family that you surround yourself with becomes, like, dangerously homogenized. Like, can you think of, like, the person who, like... I know someone who, like, they have, like, 10 other, like, white gay male friends, and, like, they loved each other so much that they all bought Tiffany rings together. And they have Tiffany friendship rings, and I was like, oh my God.
I'm both rolling my eyes and jealous.
Like, if you lined them up in a line, like, they could all play each other's stunt doubles.
Dennis,
like, that's, like, what they
love.
But I might be their one black friend. I'm throwing them under the bus without actually knowing, like, the qualities of their relationship. But my kind of rounding to the point is that I think that there's something that can happen that's super dangerous when you surround yourself with just one type of gay or one type of queer that kind of sanctions you. It kind of cuts you off from so many different, like, nuances or points of view that you could otherwise have, so that when you're struck with reality outside of your weird little homogenized gay bubble, you're reactive or you address something really problematically, and then you have this whole gay bubble to kind of back you up and gaslight you and say, like, yeah, you're right. That's like bad.
We talk about that with celebrity when you surround yourself with like only people who affirm. It's like one of the things. That's not queer family to me, because one of the things that family does well is challenge you. It's like more like a mirror to yourself than always affirming. Like, I got an email from a friend today who had hit me up a couple of times, and they were really hurt that I hadn't hit them back. And I hadn't hit them back because the plans that they were suggesting, I couldn't do. And so I was just like, well, I can't do that. And it slid out of my email. But, like, that sucked. And their feelings were hurt. And they said, oh, my feelings were hurt. And I had to be like, that was shitty of me. And, like, that sort of interaction with people that you love is super important, because it, like, it brings you back to yourself. And you're like, oh, actually, I could have done a much better job at that. You know? And so, like, for me, one of the biggest things I look for in family is accountability, is, like, transparency.
People, and who people will say, hey, that hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, who are so, my queer family is so excited for my victories, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so supportive. Yeah. The biggest cheerleaders I've ever had. Mm-hmm. But also doesn't put up with my bullshit. Mm-hmm. Right? And if exactly. if I am coming at them wrong, or if I'm like, my head is a little gassed up or whatever, it's like, they're the first people to be like, honey, check yourself. Like,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Well, and there's an added perspective to that family as well, because I think, just in general, moving through the world from a more marginalized identity adds a certain nuance of perspective that comes to you more automatically than it might to other people. And so then, like, if you have a good, critical, loving, honest queer family, they can tell you about yourself in a way that other people can't mm. because they have the language for it, they have the perspective for it, and they're, like, familiar with it in a way that some people aren't, which I think is like another thing that's really important about it.
I think I'm still kind of struggling to define or understand like what queer family means. So would it be okay if we just how does that differentiate from like intentional community spaces or separatist spaces or friendships?
Yeah.
I think queer family are the people that literally rescue you from danger. Like from
psychological. Like a good nonprofit?
Like
don't get me started on nonprofits, Loma. We're going to have a separate offline conversation.
I worked for too many nonprofits to
that bullshit.
Dive into this.
Nonprofit industrial complex.
I know.
I really do believe that, though. Like, emotional danger, psychological danger, or actual mm-hmm. real, like, physical, like, take me to the hospital danger. Like, yeah. I think that there are people that will truly save you. Mm-hmm. Beyond any other person. I think that that is because they care about you enough to do it. But I do also think that there is like maybe we'll get to this, but like there is also like an idealized version of queer family that is like such a fallacy. I feel like we as a podcast get a lot of messages from you guys that say, mm-hmm. I really wish I had a queer family like y'all. I really wish I had friends like y'all.
I hate these motherfuckers.
There are so many people that reach out to us, and I think they have, and like we are family, we're really, really good friends, but I think they have this like picturesque version of like what we are without realizing they actually have access to that right in their own hometown, and that they can cultivate that family wherever they are.
I can't stop thinking about family and relationship to like being a series of needs. Yeah. And for me, the one thing that I'm finding in common between like queer family and like our biological family is the lack of choice. I think both of them have lack of choice. Like our biological family, because we're born into it, like we have no say. It's just we pop out and we're stuck with some fuckers and that's our life.
Yes.
But I also think, and this was sparked by Joe's comment about, or when we were talking about intentional community spaces, and I was like, how intentional are these spaces? Like, what does it mean to have an intentional community space or to choose to be a part of an intentional, what does it mean to choose to be in a part of an intentional community space? If that space was formed because all of the violence is around it. Like, queer spaces are formed because of our exclusion, for survival, because of the fact that we can't fuck in the woods without thinking we're going to die when we come across, like, two queer people. Like, how much of a choice is it that we're encountering, like, these queer families? So I think in that sense, both the queer and the biological families are defined by a lack of choice.
A necessity
to survive. A desire to have our needs fulfilled.
I just want to quickly round out this like conversation to a point, and I want to turn it out to y'all. And I feel like there's a temptation to like listen to this conversation about friends and chosen family and kind of like look around yourself and be like, where the fuck are my friends, or where the fuck is my chosen family? At least from reading all of the DMs and messages that we get from y'all, I think that I would reckon that there is a lot of that reaction. And I just want to like think about a few things. Like, one, sometimes your chosen family or your queer family is in front of you and you don't even realize it. Sometimes those people are there and in communion with you and in your everyday lives, and you haven't even thought to like look at them and label that person as chosen family. And there's something that's really beautiful and really binding about labeling them and proactively thinking about them in that way that might nuance the way that you guys have relationships. I also think that if you are someone who's like in a geographically isolated space, that there are ways that you can reach out to people online and on the internet, because that might be your only resource, mm-hmm. To find people to be in communion with or to find people that you can relate to. And that will be a long game. That might be someone that you might never meet for like five or six or 10 years or whatever. But that doesn't mean that you can't cultivate that relationship. But mm-hmm. also just like be open to it. Yeah. And I think that's like my advice to myself too, is that like, I didn't really find my chosen family until I was open to it.
Yeah.
And like, and also like you have like friendships in your past where you're like, oh, that was chosen family all along. But it isn't until you open your brain and you're open to it that, that they really step into your life.
So.
Cheers.
You're our family thoughts.
Hi, honey buns. Are you even ready for this jelly?
I'm not.
Each week, we go way over time discussing the main segment, like literally like an extra half hour over, and we have to edit all this shit out. And we want to extend the conversation to y'all. So on social media, join us on Twitter. Every week, we will pin a few thought-starting questions to the top of our page. So add us, get all up in our mentions, talk amongst yourselves, and get some like extra, you know, nutritional value, some goodness in your thoughty diet. On Twitter at Food for Thought Pod, as always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T.
All right, queens, I feel like I'm full, but I could fit one more thing inside of me. Dennis knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, arch my back.
Come on in.
His back is pre-arched, everybody.
Just stays arched. I don't get arched. I stay arched, okay?
Yes, done. And new Twitter bio.
This week's dessert, this like scrumptious little thing at the end of your meal, is none other than Chellaman on Instagram.
Ooh, Fran, an Instagram influencer.
Okay, here's the thing. No. I don't like influencers. I don't like thirst traps, and I'm about to recommend to you an influencer thirst trap. In fact, last year I purged my entire social media from thirst traps. Like, I only follow a very select few now because I want to be better for myself this year. And one of those people that I follow is Chellaman, C-H-E-L-L-A man on Instagram. They're a trans, genderqueer, deaf, Jewish, Chinese American artist, literally 19 years old. And I like hate YouTubers. I really, really hate them. But last year, Chellaman created a YouTube channel that started to document in detail his transition in perpetuity. And that includes things from like starting the very first day he started doing to testosterone, to the day he had top surgery, to the day he asked his dad if he could start calling him as he instead of she. And like the way that you watch his progression and his growth over the course of this journey is like such a true testament to me to what social media can be and have actual real impact on other people's lives.
Hi, my name is Chellaman, and this is my voice one day on T.
Hi, my name is Chellaman, and this is my voice 7 weeks on T.
Hi, my name is Chellaman, and this is my voice 9 weeks on T.
Hi, my name is Chellaman, and this is my voice 16 weeks on T.
Hi, my name is Chellaman, and this is my voice 25 weeks on T.
Hi, my name is Chellaman, and this is my voice 26 weeks on T.
Hi, my name is Chellaman, and this is my voice 28 weeks on T.
And like, he's also just so hot and 19, and it's like giving me a lot of really complicated feelings. And like, he's also like being picked up by like fashion shows and stuff, so he's like walking in Fashion Week,
oh my God.
Like, that's creating more thirst content, and it's really hard for me.
To be honest, Fran is only 26, so it is not that pervy of him.
It's completely inappropriate like, for him.
Think more European
for
Joe.
For Joe, on the other hand.
If it were my 35-year-old college professor ass, it would not be that cute, but...
I mean, because he could be your child.
Mathematically, no, Dennis. That's not math. Okay,
he is genderqueer, but he's in a relationship with a girl, and it's like this heart-stopping little like online relationship, and they do everything together, and it's like so saccharinely, sweetly beautiful, and I want to kill myself.
I mean, I will say that this is Joe. I, since my breakup, have been so disgusted by Instagram relationships, but well, I know Loma knows what I'm talking about.
No, no, they don't bother me. I love
really?
Love.
But I say that when I find a couple that I actually love, I know that there's something special there. It's something different because
exactly.
like the sort of performative like couplehood now just makes me want to like choke on my own vomit.
If they're of color and queer, I'm 100% for it. Anything else?
Oh God, that is definitely not my standard.
I know. I
had to even unfollow some of those people.
I'm just saying. I may not look all the time, but I will follow and whatever. But if they're not, then I'm just like, get the fuck out of here. But yeah, no.
What I mean, I find it amazing. It's so sexy. Interesting that a 19-year-old can have such a focused vision of like what to produce on. I mean, that is almost scary to me.
Yeah, especially when he was like 18. Yeah. He was like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to document this. And I think that it's funny because he's like learning in public and he's doing all these things in public. And there are a lot of reasons why like what he's doing is dangerous or can perpetuate certain ideals. But he's like so honest about where he is in his transition and how it's beautiful in his own way. Mm-hmm. And he owns it solely for himself so that it's beautiful to the people that aren't there yet or beautiful to the people that don't see themselves reflected in Instagram influencership, which doesn't happen for trans people.
I kind of like that we're talking about like learning in public and having an arc. I think so many times that we think about gender and we think about like our relationship to media, both in terms of like a destination that we arrive at. Like, so I transitioned from like A to B, or I was like A, unprepared to like produce public facing work. And now I'm like B, prepared to produce public facing work. And I like it more in terms of like a narrative and like participating in like this narrative of like me and my relationship to my gender, or like me and my relationship to my work, and I'm gonna fuck up and then I'm gonna get better or do something different. Yeah. So
and
I like that framing.
It requires so much vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that in influencer community, that word just grosses me out. There's so little vulnerability.
And there's so little like just good content. Like, it's so, there's such
the word
grossness.
Content bums me out.
But this is what Chella is making is art, but it's also content. And there is something about his content that is literally life-saving. Aww. And there is something about the way he is documenting his transition on a spectrum that is just I'd never seen before.
Well, I'm also down for content as opposed to art too. Yeah. I don't
know. You just bring it all the controversy to the mic.
I'm sorry. But not everything has to be beautiful. Not everything has to be art.
Exactly.
Right? Well, and or I agree. The idea that some things that are art are not necessarily beautiful as well, or they're controversial or whatever.
And
that's
truly
my sense.
Like the Instagram algorithm like absolutely like is racist and is absolutely homophobic and doesn't champion these people in so many different ways. So to watch him break through that is just like, it makes me hopeful for the world.
Beautiful. That's what amazing. A good dessert.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our partnership with Into, an online magazine for queer news and culture. You can head over to intomore.com for an extra little love letter from us thoughts. And our engineer, Alex Mead Fox at Spaceman Sound Studios, is the most amazing person ever. Thank you, Alex.
Hi, we love you.
I love your new glasses. They're so cute.
Yeah, they look so good.
I love your hot working man boots.
Oh my God. FYI.
Dennis wants to fuck Alex, our sound producer.
It's
all bad.
It's fine. I do. Our producer is young and hung and marches to the beat of her own drum. So props to you, mama, Alexandra De Palma.
I want
to
fuck our producer, Alexandra De Palma.
Absolutely. I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squish Co. on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Venmo.
I'm Joe. You can find me at www.josephosmondson.com.
And I am Dennis Norris II, and I have a chapbook out, a collection of 4 short stories, which you can find at my website, www.dennisnorrisii.com.
And I'm Christopher Soto, also known as Loma. I'm the editor of Nepalna, a journal dedicated to queer poets of color, which is out May 1st, 2018.
Yes.
Thank you. You could pre-order that at Nightboat Books.
Yes. You can listen to Food for Thought on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, or we will work very closely with a very powerful witch and we'll turn y'all straight. Like,
no,
I swear to God, I will do it. I swear to God.
We can do it.
Find us on Twitter and Facebook at Food for Thought Pod and on Instagram at Gay Sluts Who Read. Sign up for our newsletter for episode insights, reading lists, and extra delectable content at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. And finally, send us your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick pics. At
always.
Thoughts at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thoughts spelled how?
T-H-O-T.
Bye.
Bye.
And wait, how do you say the reporter's name who fucked me yesterday?
You didn't figure that out ahead of time?
No.
Before you fucked him?
No. I did not know how to say it.
Wow. Because your mouth was full, so you didn't have time to practice.
Oh my God!